Polka Dots and Moonbeams, the James or Jimmy Van Heusen tune, as I think he's more commonly known, arranged by Lenny Niehaus for saxophone quartet, and it's the Washington Saxophone Quartet, heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Apparently this is from a CD. Well, it is from a CD from that group's tour of China way back when. I'm Kevin Kelly. Live and Local is the show that connects you to local performances throughout our listening area. And on today's program, we will be talking eventually about a bunch of performances that you have the opportunity to attend at the University of Illinois during the annual conference of the North American Saxophone Alliance, or NASA, not meaning the usual NASA. But in this case, it's all about saxophones. Their biennial national conference. I think I said annual, but biennial. And it starts, well, activities, I think, start on Wednesday. The public events start, well, I guess on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Here to talk to me and therefore you about it is J. Michael Holmes, who is a clinical assistant professor at the University of Illinois School of Music, as well as the enrollment management director there, and one of the co-organizers of the conference, along with Professor Deborah Richtmeier, who was actually a former teacher of yours.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for coming in.
It's my pleasure.
How is this the first time the conference has been at the U of I?
Yeah, it's actually the very first time. The conference has started about 20 years ago, and this is actually the anniversary of the 20th, the very first conference that was hosted, I believe, at the West Virginia University is where it originally started. And this conference has been in the state of Illinois up at Beenan School of Music, or as it was formerly just known as Northwestern University, because one of our founding members of the overall organization, Fred Hemke, who will be here for our conference, actually was a host of this event many years ago. But yes, it's the first time here on our campus that we're doing this, and we're very excited to bring it to the community.
Yeah, I'm sure. Is there any, there must be certain criteria that the conference decides makes a location, I assume usually a center of academia, makes it attractive for
sure.
The conference?
Sure, yeah. These have always, all of our biennial conferences, the large conferences, we actually do regional conferences on the off years, but every other year we're doing our national conferences. We had to put in a bid to actually host the conference, which included information about the school and the venues that we have available, the kinds of things that we have here in the community, just some overall information about what we were going to do and what our sort of ideas were. And we won that bid 2 years ago.
Sounds like the Olympics.
It was not quite like that, but yes. Similar in some ways, but we actually won that bid 2 years ago when the conference was being held in Arizona and found out that we would be hosting this. So we've been in preparations for about 2 years now of actually getting everything geared up and ready at the Krannert Center within the School of Music and our facilities and sort of just everything else that goes into hosting a national conference and welcoming our guests here, hotel rooms, eating venues, things along those lines.
I do want to ask you, of course, about the conference itself and particularly about the things that are available to the public. But first I wanted to address the themes. This is sort of a dual theme, one of which potentially more interesting to our listeners, and that's the fact that it's the 200th birthday of a fellow named Adolf Sachs, mm-hmm. who, or as he would have said, Sachs, I guess, mm-hmm. Or Sachs, who was the inventor, the actual inventor of the saxophone?
Correct, yeah, his namesake. He was a Belgian inventor who had a love for music and really wanted to sort of invent a new instrument, originally actually for the orchestral venue. The saxophone was the great hybrid. Prior to hybrid being a word that we throw around nowadays for cars and all sorts of things, it was the hybrid between brass instruments and woodwind instruments. So combining the reed and fingering structure more of very similar to the oboe with the brass make and body of what you would have for a trumpet or trombone or something along those lines. So his idea was to have an instrument that could be mellow But also carry at the same time. And that was what his original concept was for the instrument. And it was invented in the mid-1800s, about 1840, 1843, somewhere in there. And as we know now, it didn't really find a permanent home in the orchestra, more in jazz and certainly in chamber music. But we certainly are still striving for his original intent for the instrument to be taken seriously as a concert instrument.
Does that mean that, in part, the annual conference is at all a proselytizing event for the saxophone?
Perhaps. I mean, it's definitely an event for us to get together and share new music. It's an event for us to get to show some idiomatic music that that works well in many different ability levels for high schoolers or for the professional level. I think it's there for us to showcase what the instrument can really do. We're very, very fortunate to have an instrument that really has a huge range to it. It can be the greatest jazz instrument while still being the greatest classical instrument. The voice of the saxophone is really pliable, which I think is why a lot of us are drawn to that sound.
I think I was probably aware of the saxophone as a classical instrument from college, and in fact, I went to Northwestern, mm-hmm. where Frederick Hemke was at the time the chairman of the wind and percussion division. Mm-hmm. And I don't actually think I ever heard him play, but I heard lots of people play classical saxophone, which I think until then was sort of a foreign concept mm-hmm. to me, and I imagine that probably many people are in the same boat. I quite enjoy it, I have to say.
Well, good, thank you.
Yeah, and I think this is said about a number of different instruments, but I know I've heard it said relative to the saxophone, and that is that it can be imitative of the human voice, mm-hmm. Especially well. I've heard it said of the cello.
Oh, absolutely.
I think somebody even said it of the viola.
Yeah, well, I think we all try to relate ourselves to the human voice as much as possible, but I absolutely think that the saxophone is very much that. There's a large range of acceptable soundscapes within the saxophone world, which makes it really exciting because every performer is vastly different from the other. So each performance is very different, depending on the music, depending on the performer themselves and what they're doing. So it can be quite exciting for the listener and also for a saxophonist because there's such a range of acceptable voices that we can use within that music, and we can really sort of find ourselves within that, which I think is very similar to what the human voice would be able to do when singing.
Have there been a lot of changes in the instrument since Adolf Sachs' invention of it in the first place?
Yeah, that's a really great question. That's actually why the theme of our conference also incorporates the industry, because the industry has been really key in some of those development things that you're speaking of. In my former life prior to Illinois, I actually worked with the music industry, so It's a group of people that care wholeheartedly about the well-being of the saxophone, but also trying to make it as easy as possible for the user, being the saxophonist, to use that instrument. So the original Adolf Sax actually, I believe, only went up to a high E flat above the staff. I think it's extended up much beyond that. We actually have an altissimo range even beyond that now, to the higher tessitura of the instrument. And the original instrument, I believe, only went down at the time maybe a C, a low B, and it's actually extended to low B flat and low A on some of the lower instruments. So there's been some notes that have been added to the saxophone along the way, and a lot of ergonomic sort of features that help the hand positions and just making it as easy as possible for the saxophonist to be fluid with their technique.
I posted on our website it's not exactly a cartoon, but it's drawings of, I think, four mm-hmm. different types of saxophones. Mm-hmm. There must be more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I actually saw that. It's a great little sort of caricature, if you will. But that was probably some of the early renderings of the saxophone. And as I said earlier, the saxophone itself was actually invented for the orchestral genre. And one of the earliest instruments in the saxophone family was actually the bass saxophone. And I believe it was actually pitched in C at the time. And one of his other original and early instruments was actually the sopranino, which is an octave higher than the alto saxophone, which most people know of. The family that most people probably are most aware of at this point in time is soprano, alto, tenor, barry, just like a chorus. But we also do have the bass saxophone, sopranino, there's soprillo, there's...
What is soprillo?
Soprillo's even, it would be an octave higher than the soprano. It'd be pretty rare for us to have one of those, but there's quite...
So which one is the highest then?
Soprillo would be one of the highest, but I actually believe there's one higher than that.
Sopranino is not?
Sopranino would be below a soprillo.
Oh, the low, okay.
Yeah.
I need a chart.
They get smaller as they go up.
The soprillo is the one I hadn't heard of.
Yeah.
Well, and alto, tenor, and baritone, probably the ones used most often in jazz.
Correct, yeah. In particular, tenor saxophone in jazz, that's probably the most common, although alto and baritone saxophone would also be very, very common.
True that the classical sax is most often the alto?
I would say... most of the time, either alto or soprano saxophone, although there was quite a bit of literature as well for the tenor saxophone. Mm. And it depends if it's being used as a solo instrument or there's quite a bit of orchestral literature that requires the tenor saxophone. Mm. Pieces like Bolero, Romeo and Juliet.
Prokofiev.
Prokofiev, yeah. You know, some of these pieces that really do, they were written originally with the saxophone in mind, incorporated into the soundscape of the orchestra. As a solo instrument, it tends more towards, if you're playing with an orchestra, if you're doing a concerto, probably more towards the alto and soprano, but they're also a little bit easier to be heard over top of, you know, an entire orchestra.
Well, since you've mentioned that the sax originally intended to be an orchestral instrument. Here is, in fact, Deborah Richtmeyer, who is the professor here at the University of Illinois and your co-host mm-hmm. of the NASA conference. We're talking about the North American Saxophone Alliance Biennial National Conference, which is opening Wednesday at the University of Illinois School of Music. And in fact, Deborah will be playing this piece by Alexander Glazunov on one of the evening concerts.
Yeah, Thursday evening at 7 o'clock in the Great Hall
of the Krannert Center. Mm-hmm. Here's the opening of the piece. Kirk Trevor conducts the Slovak Radio Orchestra. My guest is Michael Holmes, also of the University of Illinois School of Music. Thank you. Alto saxophonist Deborah Richtmeier playing the concerto for that instrument and string orchestra by Alexander Glazunov with the Slovak Radio Orchestra conducted by Kirk Trevor, a recording made about 11 years ago, a CD called Extravaganza for Saxophone and Orchestra with Deborah Richtmeier playing both alto and soprano. And she'll be playing that complete concerto with the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra conducted by Donald Schleicher Thursday night, a concert that starts at 7 o'clock, features five different saxophone soloists. Two of them will be playing with the Illinois Wind Symphony, led by Linda Morehouse, and then the other three with the U of I Symphony. Deborah Richtmeier with the orchestra, Fred Hemke, we've referred to earlier, and then Eugene Rousseau also on that concert. Timothy Roberts and Clifford Lehman playing with the band Thursday night at 7 o'clock. It's the opening concerto concert for the biennial conference of the North American Saxophone Alliance, which is happening at the University of Illinois this week. My guest is the co-host, along with Deborah Richtmeier, Michael Holmes, also of the University of Illinois. When did you first know that the saxophone was a classical instrument?
I don't know. You know, I picked up the saxophone in fourth grade like a lot of students do, but I did it to spite my sister, actually. She so badly wanted to play the saxophone when she was in fifth grade. I'm a year younger than her. And my parents said, no, we just cannot afford that. So at the time, I think I just wanted to spite my sister, and so I said, well, I want to play the saxophone then. And so we ordered one through the newspaper and had it delivered, and I absolutely fell in love with it right away from the very first moment. And so I started taking lessons, and sooner or later started hearing some recordings on LP of, you know, some of the people we're going to have here at the conference, actually, Fred Hemke and Eugene Rousseau and Don Cinta, who's not going to be here, but some individuals that now I know professionally that I found this love of the voice of the instrument, this sort of really mellow sound that was just so pliable. So I think it was fairly early on, but I don't know necessarily the exact moment I figured that out.
But your introduction to the instrument was really from the classical side.
Correct.
Not from the jazz side.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I actually, I didn't listen to a lot of jazz saxophone until after I started to play the saxophone, and then started to realize that there was a whole other world that was opening up on that side as well. And, you know, again, just fell in love with that overall sound. Although I'm classically trained, I do play jazz from time to time, but it's not my main voice, if you will.
I wondered if it is, if most people who play classical also play jazz, or not necessarily.
I think a lot of us, and I can't speak for every saxophonist, of course, but I think many of us do a bit of both, but most people tend towards one or the other. I don't know a lot of individuals that are absolutely, you know, trying to make a professional living playing both sides of the saxophone in that way.
Is making a professional living as a classical saxophonist a common thing?
Yeah, why not? There's actually quite a bit to do as a classical saxophonist. Now, you certainly have to be an entrepreneur. You have to really understand the music world and what options there are. We have a lot of saxophonists who, of course, teach in academia, teach lessons. They may be teaching privately. A lot of individuals involved with saxophone quartets and chamber music and doing outreach activities with that. In the music industry, you know, making a living in the music industry while still playing and teaching. I would say being a recording artist and only recording and playing the saxophone as a full-time living, that would probably be pretty rare.
Of course, for jazz, that can be quite a different story.
Of course.
It is quite a different story. Mm-hmm. And we should say that there will be jazz at this conference. This is not a classical saxophone conference.
Absolutely.
It's a saxophone conference.
Yeah, it's an entire saxophone conference. And we have really strive to incorporate a lot of jazz into this conference, including evening nightcap performances after each one of our, we have three main evening performances, Thursday evening being the first, March 20th, in the Great Hall. And then afterward, we'll actually have a jazz trio with saxophone soloists along with them. And that'll be in the Krannert Lobby, and that's free and open to the public. We have an evening concert on Friday, actually with our concert jazz band conducted by Chip McNeil. And we'll feature three soloists with that, Brad Lely from UNT, Chip McNeil, and then David Bixler from Bowling Green State University. And those individuals will also be incorporated into our evening nightcap event. And then after our evening concert on Saturday, we also have a nightcap. And actually, Saturday evening is our chamber music concert. And we're actually featuring a jazz artist on that chamber music concert. And that's actually Jeff Coffin, who plays with Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, and now with the Dave Matthews Band.
And I'll be talking with Jeff Coffin on Saturday's Live and Friday. Yeah. Sorry, there's no Saturday Live and Local. Friday's Live and Local.
Yeah, and everybody should tune in. He's a really cool guy, so I think everybody will really enjoy that.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. And then also talking with Frederick Hempke, we referenced a couple times earlier, on Wednesday's Live and Local.
Great.
Saturday, as you said, is the chamber music program, which means there is a piece for two saxophones and piano, you playing with Deborah Richtmeier, and a saxophone quartet with percussion ensemble, which should be interesting, and then some larger saxophone ensembles. One of them has the wonderful name of the Monin' Frogs.
Yeah. Yeah, the Monin' Frogs are actually based out of Michigan, and they're sort of a vaudevillian style of group, and they're fun, they're hilarious to watch, and they're just fantastic performers. They wear, you know, green suspenders and bow ties, and just, it's a really fun event. It just goes to show the sort of wide range of what the saxophone does that we consider to be sort of part of our repertoire.
And they'll be playing, it looks like, a short program of ragtime music.
Yep.
But then there's also, the rest is classical, I guess. Here is a recording that has the University of Illinois Saxophone Studio, led by Deborah Richtmeier. You're on at least one of these pieces. This one is a piece written by one of the composers at the University of Illinois on faculty, Stephen Andrew Taylor, whose music, if anybody is goes to performances of the U of I opera program, or Lyric Theater as it's now called, you might have seen his opera, Paradise is Lost.
Paradise is Lost,
called.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some really beautiful music there. This is called World Without Words. Again, we'll just hear the beginning part of it. The UIUC Saxophone Choir, conducted by Deborah Richtmeier, on Live and Local. Thank you. Okay, I have to ask, what was just going on there? Those are actually saxophones.
Yeah, it's the saxophone can, like I said, can do quite a bit of different things. So that's actually called a slap tongue, when the player is actually taking their tongue and creating basically like a suction on the reed and sort of popping it off the reed. And when that happens, it gets a sort of very percussive sound. And so that piece, I can't remember the exact number of us that are performing on there, but it's probably 8 to 10 different players on there, and all of the performers are actually using the slap tongue at that point in time to sort of create that percussive sound.
It was a cool effect and remarkably good ensemble as well.
Yeah, well, it's not bad, yeah.
I would think that could be like sort of string pizzicato where it can be difficult to actually get it together.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That was from a piece that probably should have just played the rest of because we heard about two-thirds of it. World Without Words for Saxophone Choir, 2009 composition by Stephen Taylor, professor of composition at the University of Illinois School of Music, and it was the U of I Saxophone Choir, conducted by the saxophone professor there, Deborah Richtmeier, who is also co-host this week of the biennial conference of the North American Saxophone Alliance, which is happening at the University of Illinois. Her co-host is J. Michael Holmes, who is with us on the program today. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-333-4577. So that's an example of more contemporary writing for the saxophone. The classical saxophone, am I right in saying, doesn't have a really long history of writing for it?
Well, with the saxophone itself was invented in, you know, like I said, 1840, 1845, somewhere in there. 1843 is what most of us say. So original works for the saxophone were fairly slow at the get-go, although we did get some great compositions by Debussy and other great composers of the time. But we, as classical saxophonists, also get a lot of contemporary music, and contemporary in particular. And we have, I couldn't even tell you how many world premieres will be happening during this conference, because it's a countless number, because composers tend to really enjoy working with the saxophone, and the saxophone family is very excited in working with composers, because we enjoy expanding the saxophone repertoire. And the composers really enjoy working with musicians who are very pliable in what they're able to do and what they're willing to do as well. And so, and the example of the piece that we just played is part of that. Steve Taylor really enjoys writing these sort of soundscape, these movie almost quality kinds of pieces, but he uses the saxophone family as his way of doing so. And he also understands that bending pitches and percussive natures of using slap tongues and even just key clicks and things along those lines can be really, I think you'd probably call them hip. I think he would just say they're hip.
Oh, the Steve would, yeah, he probably would say something like that. And the siren effect was pretty cool. I don't think I realized you could make that long a seamless slide.
Yeah, the saxophone is controlled, of course, by the reed and the mouthpiece, but also the tongue position, the throat position, can really make a huge difference in the variation of the sound and also bending of pitches, which is basically what's happening there.
There's a piece on this same recording with the U of I Saxophone Studio called World Without Words. The whole CD is actually named, shares the name of Steve Taylor's piece, that features you as soloist on soprano sax, mm-hmm. By a fellow named Ed Martin. The piece is called Flurry. Who's he? And tell us about the piece, since you had the privilege of premiering it, speaking of premieres.
Yeah, Ed Martin actually teaches at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh. He is, of course, a composer. He actually did his doctorate here at the university. And at the time, Ed and I were actually doctoral candidates and students together, so we got to know each other pretty well. And we started working with one another, and this piece, Flurry, was written fairly programmatically is a look at his sort of first winter back here in the Midwest. And it's about snow flurries, basically, where there are times when they're really beautiful and quiet and meditative, and there's other moments when they're sort of in your face and you're ready to be rid of them, very much like this winter. So it's a piece that sort of looks at the Midwest flurries in a way that is done through the eyes of a contemporary composer. So he actually utilizes what's referred to as music concrete. So he takes sound samples of the saxophone, key clicks, pitches, things along those lines, records them and actually manipulates the sound electronically. So the performer, me in this instance, is actually performing with a fixed media CD and then the saxophone soloist with it.
The sampled sounds, do they include you in the samples?
In this piece, they do not. I did a further piece with him called Biota, which is for tenor saxophone, and all of those sound samples were things that we did together. I think if I remember correctly, we did go back on this piece and add a few things that may have been me, but this is actually another friend of mine, Michael Bavenzi, who did the original recording of these sound samples.
The samples. Mm-hmm. The piece is called Flurry by Ed Martin for soprano sax and electronic music. Michael Holmes is the soloist here on Live and Local. rather intriguing piece for saxophone, and a reminder that it's called Flurry, reference to snow flurries. If you missed that earlier, you can sort of backtrack your soundtrack, so to speak, and have an idea of what some of those sounds were representing. Soprano sax played here by Michael Holmes, and with electronic music as well. The composition by Ed Martin from a CD called World Without Words by the University of Illinois Saxophone Studio, 2008-2009. Lots of music for solo, duo, ensemble, saxes. And that same could be said for the conference happening this week at the University of Illinois School of Music, the biennial conference of the North American Saxophone Alliance, which is happening here for the first time. Michael Holmes is my guest on the show today. He and Deborah Richtmeyer of the University of Illinois faculty are co-hosting the conference. Probably a good time to talk about some of the things that people can actually go see and hear, because there's many things open to the public through different means, including the competitions that are happening.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we've got during the conference itself, the actual kickoff to the conference is our opening evening night concert on Thursday at 7 o'clock in the Great Hall at Kraner Center. But we actually are running three competitions simultaneously during this, and those start on Wednesday, and those are open to the public if people would like to go. We have a quartet competition, we have a solo competition, a high school solo competition, and a jazz competition. So I guess four that are actually going on. And then we also did a fifth, which was a composition competition. And there's recitals going on throughout the day, pretty much every day in the Kraner Center lobby at Stage 5. We'll have performances there throughout the entire day. We will also have day passes available if people would like to come to any of the actual concerts that are in the Tryon Festival Theater and the Great Hall, Smith Recital Hall, the Music Building Auditorium. We're using Spurlock Night Auditorium, Spurlock Museum Night Auditorium. So we have day passes for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We also have the evening concerts that we have tickets available just specifically for the evening concert events. Or you can actually purchase the entire conference and go to everything, but you know, it may be a bit much saxophone for non-saxophones.
If you're a glutton for saxophones, there you go.
Well, you know,
So the competitions are happening throughout the day.
They are, well, and all of that information can actually be found on our website. It's NASA conference.com. And there's a schedule of events on there. And like I said, we have about a little over 350 individual events that are going on, some of them being quartets, some being soloists, some being trios, jazz, mass saxophone choirs, collaborative projects with other instruments, such as flute and saxophone or voice and saxophone. But of course, everything has to incorporate the saxophone. That's the most important part.
Well, I would assume so.
Well, of course.
We've mentioned a few times a couple of maybe extra special guests who are coming to the conference, both of whom will be performing as soloists on that opening program. I'm referring now, at least in the classical side, to Frederick Hemke and Eugene Rousseau, mm-hmm. who in the material that I saw publicizing the conference referred to them as legends of the classical sax.
Absolutely. The American classical saxophone was really defined by those two gentlemen, Eugene Rousseau, Don Cinta, Fred Hemke, Cecil Leeson. There's some individuals that were really at the forefront and some of the first full-time saxophone professors. Eugene Rousseau has been teaching for I don't even want to guess how many years, 40 plus years at this point at different institutions, and has really defined what we do is the American saxophone. And we're so fortunate to have those individuals still in the community, meaning the saxophone community. They studied with some of the forefathers of what we do. And in fact, Eugene Rousseau and Fred Hemke both studied with an individual by the name of Marcel Mule. And Marcel Mule actually took over at the Paris Conservatory from Adolphe Sax himself. So that's how closely related we are to the original father of the saxophone. So to have those individuals here, Eugene Rousseau doing a piece based on, think he's doing a Porgy and Bess medley.
Porgy and Bess,
if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Fred Hemke, who actually is doing the second performance ever of a new Augusta Reed Thomas piece with our orchestra. And that's on Thursday evening. So, yeah, it's quite an exciting event for us.
So they both studied in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I mean, aside from the fact that Adolf Sax was Belgian, can it be said that the real heart, almost birthplace of the classical sax is really France?
Yeah. Adolf Sax, of course, himself was Belgian, who grew up and was born in Dinan. But he went from Belgium to Paris, and actually that's where he got the patent for the saxophone when he invented the saxophone and found – it really started to find its voice originally in the French military bands, also in some early orchestral works for saxophone, and then it began coming over to the United States and found a quick home in jazz here in the United States. So it all – I guess all still goes back to that concept of the saxophone being – so pliable. There's so many options for the saxophonist to style, not only stylistically, but just sound concept wise.
The going back to the competitions and when people can go and so on, are the solo quartet and jazz, are they happening all at the same time, or is there one day? And
there are we're running a lot of things simultaneously, so we have a lot of things sort of stacked on top of each other. There are some events that are without interruption by other events, our evening concert in particular, and we have some panel discussions, some other things that we're doing. But I believe that the competitions, there's a few of them running over top of one another. The quartet and the solo are not, the collegiate solo rounds are not, because we have a lot of people that are actually involved with both. We have a lot of collegiate soloists that are also doing the quartet competition.
So again, consult the schedule at nasaconference.com.
Mm-hmm.
Here is, we heard at the outset, the Washington Saxophone Quartet doing something really quite light. This is something that's quite beautiful. Not originally for saxophone, but for orchestra, for full orchestra. It comes from the Enigma Variations of Edward Elgar. This is certainly the most famous of the variations, known as Nimrod, on Live and Local.
Thank you.
the Washington Saxophone Quartet. Music by Edward Elgar. Nimrod, the name of one of the variations from his Enigma variations. This comes from the Washington Group's CD known as called Daydream, here on Live and Local. It happens to be, I think, only one of only two or three saxophone quartet recordings we have at the radio station, which is sort of sad. I'm quite fond of saxophone quartets myself.
We'll have to help. We'll see what we can do about that.
That would be wonderful. I know I've enjoyed having sax quartets at least a couple of times from the Illinois Summer Youth Music Camps. Mm-hmm. And we've brought students in here at the end of their week at the University of Illinois. That's the voice of Michael Holmes, who is one of the co-hosts and co-organizers, is it?
Correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Of the biennial conference happening this week of the North American Saxophone Alliance here at the University of Illinois. Deborah Richtmeyer, who's the professor at the U of I of saxophone, also the other organizer. And as we said, you can get the complete schedule of competitions that are happening, recitals that are happening, and then evening concerts that are happening. You can find out how to get a day pass or a concert ticket, or just how to show up and see all the free stuff that is there as well. It's nasaconference.com.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And I've appreciated very much having you come in and let us know about it, telling us a little bit about the saxophone, a lot of stuff I didn't know.
Well, it's my pleasure. We're really very excited to bring this to the Champaign-Urbana community. So it's everybody has really been fantastic to work with through all of this. So we're very excited, and hopefully everybody will see a lot of saxophones walking around campus this week.
Will you be performing at all yourself?
Yeah, I'm actually playing with my professional saxophone quartet on Friday at 1:20, the Obsidian Saxophone Quartet.
Obsidian?
Obsidian. And then Professor Richtmeyer, Deborah, and I will be performing on Saturday evening at 7 o'clock, where the opening piece at the Great Hall.
Right, we mentioned it. Paganini Lost.
Yep.
Curious about that title.
Oh, it's just based on some of the caprices, it's a quite a virtuosic work that incorporates two saxophones and piano. Really has been quite an undertaking and a lot of fun to work with my colleague Deborah.
I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun for anybody who is either knows they're a fan of the saxophone or thinks they might just be curious. You might come away a fan.
Oh, please, we would love to have you there.
NASAconference.com. Mike, thanks very much for Michael. Excuse me. Thanks very much for coming on the show and telling us about it. Live and Local today is made possible with support from Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign, also offering a variety of tea and chai, open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713. This is 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana, with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music and more for Central Illinois, member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.